This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, June 22nd, 1940. Step into the Wayback Machine. Pearl Harbor has not yet happened. War is raging in Europe and the Far East. And Republican Representative Hamilton Fish of New York steps up to the floor of the House to give a speech. He says, Colonel Lindbergh was right when he said in one of his recent speeches, let us stop this hysterical chatter about calamity and invasion that has been running rife these last few days. It is not fitting to the people who built this nation. The only reason we're in danger of becoming involved in this war is because there are powerful elements in America who desire to take part. Let us have put an end to the secret diplomacy and the secret commitments of President Roosevelt that have brought ruin and disaster to France. President Roosevelt alarmed the nation by his inflammatory Italian dagger thrust in the heart speech. Whom do we fear? Do we fear Hitler, who seems afraid to attack England over 20 miles of sea when he would have 3,000 miles to cross over here? This is preposterous. Let's stop this fear hysteria. Peacetime conscription, a draft in America, is the direct road to Hitlerism, dictatorship, and national socialism. If we adopt peacetime conscription, we are merely copying Nazi methods and ideology. Mr. Speaker, the Roosevelt Far Eastern policy of bluff and bluster has driven Japan into the arms of Nazi Germany and fascist Italy. No one in Japan really wants war with the United States. Right. Well, we've had senators and congressmen who got it wrong before. In fact, that's from the book The Illustrious Dunderheads by Rex Stout, a complete collection of all the pro-Hitler speeches given from 1933 until 1940 on the floor of the House of Representatives and the Senate. It's astonishing. But none of them actually ever wrote a letter to Mr. Hitler saying, or Chancellor Hitler, I guess would be his title, saying, you know, we don't like FDR. We hate him so much we stand on the floor of the House and Senate and trash him. But, you know, if he and his friends in France or whatever ever succeed in knocking you over, don't worry. We can undo his actions. Neil McCabe is on the line with us, conservative columnist with townhall.com, editor of the Washington Mercury news site, thewashingtonmercury.com. Neil.
Here to defend the collaborators, Neil McCabe.
Yes, here to defend the traitors, to quote the New York Daily News front page. Traitors.
Well, let's go back, Tom. I think, to be fair, Hamilton Fish, even in the quote that you made, was negative on Hitlerism. And certainly Germany never posed a physical threat to the United States, for the record.
Okay. So we should not have involved ourselves in World War II?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that. But, I mean, at the time, with the facts that Hamilton Fish had in front of him, I think that we can grant him the benefit of sincerity.
Shall I read you the various quotes from the book about people saying that, you know, we hear all these stories about the Jews that are happening in Europe, but don't, it's just propaganda. Ignore that.
Well, I mean, Todd, I mean, FDR not only heard the stories about the Jews, he got actual intelligence reports and had a Secretary of the Treasury begging him to do something, and he did nothing.
Right. So as the Republicans on the floor of the House and Senate were demanding he do nothing.
Well, I can't speak to that, so I'll have to defer to you.
Okay.
But, you know, getting back to this letter that the great Tom Cotton has written to the Islamic Republic of Iran, I think that it's about time the Senate stood up for its prerogatives. We've seen in the last two or three years the traditional prerogatives and privileges and traditions of the United States Senate have been torn asunder in an effort to steamroll the president's agenda domestically. Now we see that the president is going to use executive action to negotiate his own treaty with Iran, and the senators are standing up saying, excuse me, I think we have a role here.
A, this is unprecedented. Never in the history of the United States has an opposition party spoken as if their president was no longer even president of the United States. Or just ignore that man in the White House. This has never happened.
Unprecedented. I mean,
this has never happened.
The Hartford the Hartford Convention that killed the Federalist Party. I mean, there have been times in our history when political opponents of the man in the White House have said things that maybe crossed the line. But I don't think this crossed the line.
Not with a foreign government and not over issues like nuclear weapons.
Well, then what would be that? What are they supposed to do, Tom? I mean,
they're supposed to do what the Constitution says they're supposed to do, which is if the president is successful. And by the way, this is not just Barack Obama. This is, I mean, I realize everybody watching Fox News thinks it's just Barack Obama. But this is the P5 plus one. These are the five permanent members of the Security Council plus Germany. So we're talking Russia, we're talking China, we're talking Germany, we're talking France, we're talking England. This is
right.
This is a group of allies who are working and I mean, you know, Russia and China, not always the most comfortable of allies, working together to make the world a safer place. And 47 Republicans believed that their partisan political agenda, this hack right-wing political agenda of denying President Obama any kind of legacy, any kind of meaningful legacy, the agenda that Kevin McCarthy laid out back on January 20th, 2009 at the caucus room conspiracy meeting, that, you know, they're still doing this and they're willing to risk nuclear war
in order to destroy this
president.
Certainly the
Fed that is treason.
Institution. There are institutional jealousies between the different branches in our government.
That doesn't
not everything that Congress or the Senate does is partisan. Some of it is institutional, and we've seen the Senate tradition.
Neil, when 100% of the people signing this thing were Republicans and 100%
right.
of the people who didn't sign it were Democrats plus seven Republicans, you cannot say that it's not partisan.
Well,
this,
I would say that
this is the definition of partisan.
It's the Democrats have incredible party discipline, and I would suggest that...
No, the Democrats are not stupid. Neither are seven Republicans, by the way, including the chairman of the House of the Senate Intelligence Committee.
The ranking senator in the Foreign Relations Committee and his former chairman criticized the president on Iran and then found out that the Justice Department is going to go after him. I mean, so maybe there's a little intimidation there too, Tom.
I don't think so. I realize that's the new Fox News conspiracy du jour Menendez.
No, I mean, the Justice Department.
You know,
the Justice Department went after Olympia Snowe's husband, and then she retired from the Senate, and then that court case was dropped. The Justice Department went after a Republican congressman in Staten Island, and then he eventually resigned. I mean, so it's.
They went after Michelle Bachmann, and she resigned. It's not uncommon, Neil, for politicians who are committing crimes, and all these Republicans were, apparently, to resign in exchange for not being prosecuted, just like it's not uncommon for banksters to pay fines rather than going to prison. But what does that have to do with this act of treason committed by these 47 senators?
There was a Democrat criticizing the president on Iran, and days later he found out the Justice Department was targeting him.
Menendez did not sign this letter. He is not a traitor.
A traitor, I think, is a little harsh.
Traitor.
Traitor?
Traitor.
Tom Cotton is a combat veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan.
That does not mean that he is not. He's 37 well, years old,
I,
Neil. He is bumbling into this thing like some kind of bull in a china shop.
When somebody is an infantry officer with a ranger tab and a veteran of two of our wars, at least you pause before you call him a traitor.
No, I not at all. Just because somebody fought in a war does not mean that they don't that they're not willing to harm their country in exchange for partisan gain. This is purely partisan, Neil, and that makes it even worse.
Well, Obama has really made things extreme.
You know, you're not going to be able to say that you can't criticize a Republican politician who happens to be a veteran. It ain't going to work. It doesn't work.
Well, you don't call him a traitor right away. Maybe give it some time.
I waited until the New York Daily News did yesterday. Neil McCabe, TheWashingtonMercury.com. Thanks, Neil.
Take care, Tom. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do you do with traitors? Benedict Arnold was a traitor, and he was a general in the Revolutionary War. Oh, I see. So, you know, just because Tom Cotton fought in Iraq, Doesn't mean he's a patriot. Benedict Arnold fought in with George Washington, and he was Benedict Arnold. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Anyway, this is to take this to the next step. Paul Waldman has a piece in today's Washington Post, and I think this nails it so well. He writes, it's safe to say that no president in modern times has had his legitimacy questioned by the opposition party as much as Barack Obama. I would say that that's not only true of modern times, that's true of the entire history of the presidency. But as his term in office enters its final phase, Republicans are embarking on an entirely new enterprise, writes Paul Waldman. They have decided that as long as President Obama holds the office of the presidency, it's no longer necessary to respect even the office itself. That's what's going on here. You have 47 Republicans telling a foreign power that this president has no power. He has no support in his country. We're not going to backstop him. If you come to a deal with him, we'll blow it up. This is treason. This is treason. Tom Cotton, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul. It's remarkable. Paul Waldman, the Plumb Line column over in the Washington Post, he quotes my rant from yesterday. I mean, he doesn't quote me, but yesterday I went off on this thing with the Richard Nixon, you know, in 68 when he blew up the peace negotiations. And, wow, it's made its way to the Washington Post today. I'm impressed. But the Logan Act, the Logan Act says that unauthorized citizens cannot negotiate on behalf of this country with a foreign government. I personally don't think that this is a violation of the Logan Act. I just think it's treason. I think it is massive disrespect. Not only to the president of the United States, but to the country. And here might be why. Why is the right so hysterical right now? Why are they so worked up? Why do they hate Obama so much? This is from the Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress, Jack Jenkins. A new study reports that white Christians are rapidly losing their majority status across the country, even in traditionally conservative states. White Christians, once the majority in virtually every major population area in America, are now a minority in 19 states. White Christians include evangelical Protestants, mainline Protestants, Catholics, Orthodox Christians, and Mormons. Which raises the question, I guess it doesn't raise the question, are Christians Mormons? This is remarkable. White Christians make up only a quarter of California's population, a third of New Mexico and Nevada's, New York's, Alaska's, Texas, about a little more than a third, Maryland, Arizona. Anyhow, we'll be right back. It's 20 minutes. Welcome back. Tom Harvin here with you. This is fascinating. This on Bloomberg. Bloomberg News. The headline, did 47 U.S. senators just commit treason by attempting to sabotage Iran deal? By David Knowles. This is Bloomberg. That's the headline. So it's not me. Did 47 U.S. senators just commit treason by attempting to sabotage Iran deal? New York Daily News. Had pictures of Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, and the word traitors on its front page yesterday, on its front cover. Even Mika Brzezinski was going after Tom Cotton. Tehran Tom, Shano tells me that they're calling him. Josh Earnest, the White House press secretary, said that the letter's goal was to undermine the negotiations with Iran. Yep. And whoa. They included in the Bloomberg article my tweet. I just saw this. Republicans are committing treason in public. Tom Hartman. Amazing. Ben Carson, fascinating stuff. So anyhow, Tom Cotton, sends this condescending letter. Maybe you're not familiar with our constitutional system. Turns out that 11 members of Rafsanjani, no, not Rafsanjani, Rouhani is the current prime minister. 11 members of his cabinet were educated in the United States. The Iranian foreign minister, the fellow to whom the letter was presumably sent, and who the guy who responded to these 47 Republican right-wing crazy senators, is a professor of international law, has studied in the United States, speaks perfect English. When he tweeted taking down Tom Cotton, Tom Cotton sent back a tweet saying, here's a Farsi translation for you. Right? I mean, it's like, this is how bad it gets. This is not good for the United States. This is not good at all. Rick in Cedar Hill, Texas. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. What's up?
I called senators, one yesterday and one today, and, you know.
That's John Cornyn and Ted Cruz?
Correct.
Yeah.
And I would describe myself as a real libertarian, not a Republican libertarian or a Tea Party libertarian.
Okay.
But I find it highly disgusting and gross what these 47 Republicans did. And, you know, I like Cruz's office. I asked if Cruz was going to be the first one to storm Iran if diplomacy doesn't work, or is he just a chicken hawk? And their office listened, surprisingly, but Cornyn's office argued with me and hung up on me.
Wow.
I just found it. And I, you know, I call my senators and representatives, you know, when they do something I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And always they'll know, and I usually get respect back. You know, sometimes it's a debate on the phone, which is awesome and cool, but, you know, never been hung up on.
Yeah.
And I find it treasonous, too, very. I mean, there's something about undercutting any president. And we all know the reason why they do this to President Obama. I never voted for Obama, but he is the president. And, you know, it's the way it is. You got to respect the office, I believe. And he doesn't hate America. He just views politics different than I do, than, you know, lots of other people do.
Yeah.
But to do what they did is gross and it's disgusting.
Rick, thanks for the call. And thanks for calling your senators. It's fascinating feedback. Jim in Riverhead, New York. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Says you disagree with me?
Well, I think the problem is that we're being suckered again by Iran. Iran's got more oil than basically anybody.
Actually, that's Saudi Arabia is number one. Iraq is number two.
No, that's debatable. I mean, what they have underground, I mean, that's been debated for a long time. But the bottom line is, what do they need? It's cheaper for them to use oil and natural gas. They got an unlimited supply of natural gas to run power plants, but they need a nuclear power plant. And, oh, you know, and you're saying, well, Russia's behind it. No kidding, Russia's behind it. Who do you think supplying them all the parts for the nuclear power plants and the plutonium? Of course they're behind it.
They're not using plutonium, Jim. They're not using plutonium. These are not fast breeder reactors, A. And B, are you suggesting that we should not be negotiating with a country that we might have conflict with? Are you saying that, for example, Reagan should never have negotiated with the Soviet Union? That Nixon should never have negotiated with the Chinese? Is that the argument that you're making?
You don't
negotiate with a state that has values you don't agree with?
No, you don't. And you don't negotiate with Iraq. We didn't negotiate with Iraq. We didn't negotiate with any of these countries because you can't win.
We have a long history of negotiating with Iraq.
the guy that just called isn't a libertarian either, because libertarians strictly believe do not get involved in other people's affairs. And that's what we got to butt out of Iran. Iran took hostages from us. Iran is out of their minds. And they'll lie however they can. We've given them treaties before, and they broke all of them.
Actually, that's not true, Jim. And in fact, during the Clinton administration, Bill Clinton got Iran to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Agreement. They did it. They stopped their nuclear program. They had inspectors from the UN every single day. When George W. Bush came into office and called Iran part of the axis of evil in his speech, Iran pulled the plug on those cameras that were running 24/7 in all their nuclear facilities, kicked out the inspectors, and said, "Okay, screw you. This is a diplomacy disaster that started with George W. Bush." And then, to this day, now Iran has allowed those inspectors back in. They have signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Agreement. Israel has not. Israel would not allow the inspectors in. And there's just this massive double standard here. And you do negotiate with your enemies. That's how you avoid war. Jim, the bumper stickers are just like, they're not good for this country.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
It's time to approach this with some essential rationality rather than just pure partisanship. Academically ugly, the good. Bertrand Piccard. On Monday, the Swiss pilot and his colleague André Borschberg took off from Abu Dhabi to begin the first solar-powered around-the-world flight in history. Their plane, the Impulse 2, uses 17,000 solar panels for fuel and will use lithium-ion batteries to keep energy in reserve during the course of the planned five-month flight. Although the Impulse 2 goes only about 43 miles an hour, slower than most highway speed limits, it's important to remember that solar-powered air travel was unimaginable just a few decades ago, and considering what's at stake with global warming, any progress on the clean air travel front is worth celebrating. Good on Bertrand Piccard and André Borschberg for showing us the way forward. The bad, Kimberly Strassel. During an appearance on Fox so-called News Sunday this weekend, the Wall Street Journal columnist complained that President Obama's speech commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Selma March focused too much on voter ID suppression laws. Seriously, take a look.
One of the unfortunate things about the speech the president gave at Selma, and most of it was great. He actually made really good points. It was very rousing. But, he just felt compelled in the end. He had to throw in this argument that there's still a big problem because of voter ID laws across the country.
Right, because God forbid that our president should take some time during an event commemorating the fight for voting rights to talk about, voting rights. And the very, very ugly Sigma Alpha Epsilon. The Oklahoma chapter of that fraternity was shut down Monday after a video surfaced online showing some of its members singing a very racist chant. And when I say racist chant, I mean a really, 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 really racist chant. Check it out. That's about as bad as it gets. I have to add, I've been on this planet a lot of years. I'm a white guy. I lived, I grew up around white people my whole entire life. I've never seen anything like that. So, I don't know. Maybe a whole bunch of white people are going to call up saying, "Oh yeah, we hear this kind of language all the time, and you're just living a sheltered life or something." Or, how did you manage not to grow up around bigots? Maybe. But what I would say to our friends, our African American friends, is who may be watching, is I really don't think that behavior is representative of most white people. But then God only knows. I mean, this is the only fraternity that started in the slave state South. I mean, when they were slave states. So, anyway. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, you wanted to talk about Tom Cotton?
Yes, I did. I got to take you off the speakerphone, okay?
Okay, sure. You there?
All right, hello?
Yeah, thank you, Charles.
Yeah, thank you. No, I just think, but you stole my thunder earlier when you did mention that Benedict Arnold was in the Revolutionary War.
Right.
And that he did, and he was, you know, a general. And he actually betrayed our country. And I think that's what Tom Cotton, I don't even think the 47 came close to it yesterday. I think they overdid it yesterday. I think these guys should be brought up on any type of charges that we can bring up against them. Because basically, you're talking about people who represent a part of this country, like you said, that's involving voter, they're trying to stop people from voting.
Right.
They thought that, I mean, they still carry around this Confederate flag, which people had died trying to, you know, get this out of our system.
You're talking about Stars and Bars. Yeah.
Exactly. So you're talking about, they assassinated Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
They put Andrew Johnson in there. I don't know how, and just thinking about him today, I was like, was he part of this assassination that we never got to really investigate? Because they've thrown this country backwards. And since that time, it's always been state against the federal government. And the only thing the federal government does is stands for everyone. We the people. It doesn't stand for, business or a certain part of this electorate.
Yeah. So in your opinion, Charles, I want to move along. I got a bunch of other callers here. But in your opinion, essentially, you think that Tom Cotton and Benedict Arnold share something in common. They're both veterans who then turned around and betrayed their country.
With the Confederate flag right behind him, yes.
Yeah, okay. There you go. Charles, thank you for the call. Henry in Orchard Park, New York. Hey, hey, Henry, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I want to comment about your guest that you had on in the first segment. I mean, he tried making a case for Cotton simply because, you know, he was a combat veteran, you know, and so he's trying to soft pedal, you know, this.
Right.
And he's trying to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's a combat veteran. Well, you know, guess what? I mean, Timothy McVeigh was a combat veteran, too, and he went out and he blew up a building.
Right.
I mean, if one combat veteran can do something as nefarious as blowing up a building, why can't another combat veteran do something just as nefarious as writing a treasonous letter to a foreign head of state?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Excellent point, Henry, and thank you for making it. It's kind of an amplification of Shano's point that Benedict Arnold was, you know, a general and you know, ended up being Benedict Arnold. Just because somebody's a veteran doesn't make them, you know, brilliant or, you know, mistake-proof or whatever. Excellent point. Henry, thank you. John in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, it says you disagree with me.
Hello, Tom. Yeah,
hey, John.
Neil was trying to educate you.
Okay. About what?
And on the 47 congressmen that's American enough to stand up against this dictatorship we're under, with Obama trying to make a deal with a terrorist organization.
So Obama's a dictator?
Oh, he's as close to Castro as you could get.
Okay, how so?
Well, I mean, look what he's done to this country. The only statement the man's made since 2008 that was true, Tom, is when he stood up campaigning and says, if I'm elected, your energy costs will skyrocket. And it did. It's home energy, car, gas, everything skyrocketed.
Actually, energy prices are lower now than they've been since the George W. Bush presidency. I don't recall him ever having said that, John. I think that you're watching too much Fox News. I don't know how to say it other than that.
No,
it sounds like you've got a problem.
He made that in one of his campaign speeches.
Yeah, right. That's something a politician would say. Vote for me and I'll raise your expenses.
Tom, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
This deal with Hillary's emails,
right?
You know that's the Democratic, the administration did that to where because the Democrats don't want her to run anyway. They're wanting her out. Who's going to be your Democratic nominee will be John Kerry. And I'm just remember that I told you.
Okay. John, thank you for that. Appreciate the call. Joe in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Oh, hi. Yeah. I like listening to you, Tom. You used to be more logical than you are now. Now you become sort of just a cliche machine. But
I'm sorry to disappoint you, Joe. Paul, oops, hang on just a minute here. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Oh, Tom, rough morning for you, it sounds like.
Tom, I'm surviving.
Yeah.
I've reached a point in my life, Paul, where occasionally I just decide not to suffer fools gladly.
Yeah, well, it's tough to listen to, I have to say. So I'll try to be serious here because it's a serious issue.
Yeah.
Even if Iran is, all of the things that previous callers have said, is not this the most reckless way to approach the situation? It certainly is unconstitutional. I'm curious to know why you don't believe that this is a violation of the Logan Act. It most clearly is.
Well, here's Paul, your legal scholarship trumps mine every day of the week, so maybe you can convince me. I read the Logan Act, and it says that you can be prosecuted if you are not authorized to conduct foreign policy and you interact with a foreign head of state. I would submit that by virtue of being elected to the United States Senate, these guys were all authorized to participate in foreign policy.
I disagree. It says in the Constitution, Article 2, Section 2, that the Senate is to advise the president on treaties.
Right.
And they clearly believe this is a treaty because they said in the letter that if don't bother negotiating because a treaty must be ratified by the Senate, and we're not going to ratify it. So they believe in the treaty or in the letter that it's a treaty, and they sent the letter to someone they believe has enough has influence in Iran.
Right, but they're legislators, Paul. They're elected to have a say in foreign policy.
Yeah, but Tom, the original person, George Logan, was a legislator too. That's where the act came from. When Timothy Pickering was the Secretary of State who introduced this act, and it was by the way, it's thought that what George Logan did in his negotiations with France was helpful. They thought, and so it doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing, but it's out of place. There's no place for it, and so that's the way the act was. Why the act? Now, I know acts that were passed in the 1798 and 1799 under the Adams administration, some of like the Sedition
right.
Act, were not necessarily things we had good use for.
Right.
But
and it
hasn't
been
act,
used since then.
Yeah, the Logan Act was just reamended in 1994. And in 2007, I know I'm running out of time, Steve King of Iowa wanted to indict Nancy Pelosi for traveling to Syria.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hang on just a second, Paul.
Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Okay, I got to track that one down. Yeah, we're going to track down the audio of that. Paul, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. We'll be back. Welcome back. Judy in Mohawk, New York. Hey, Judy, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
That's good. I completely agree with you. These people should be charged with treason. Now, I spent my time in the Navy as an officer, and this Cotton, he's a disgrace to the uniform. Doing what he did, along with 46 other yahoos, are just, it's just beyond comprehension. But I really believe that man is a disgrace to the uniform that he wore. Because once you take the oath, it never leaves you. You may DD out of the service, but you still are, I don't want to say compelled, you are still under the... Bound by your oath, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what they're doing is treasonous. No doubt in my feeble little brain.
Okay. I believe you're right, Judy, and Paul's whet my appetite here, my curiosity on the whole Logan Act thing. I'm going to have to dig into that. Judy, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Joe, watching Free Speech TV in Gordonsville, Virginia. What's on your mind, Joe?
Oh, how you doing, Tom? I've had a good morning listening to some of your callers,
yeah.
Like talking to my brother-in-law. But anyway, I was reading the Daily Cost today, and I was looking at one that said United States versus Curtis Wright Corporation.
I didn't see
that.
That
one?
No, I didn't. Tell me about it.
Well, basically, they said the president has to, Justice Sutherland said that the president has a right to to consult with Congress, and I don't know if it's constitutional law or not, but the final decision comes down to him. And it was 1936.
This is a Supreme Court case you're talking about.
Pardon?
You're talking about a Supreme Court case that upheld Roosevelt's ability to conduct foreign policy, essentially.
Correct.
Yeah.
I don't know if it applies to anything or not.
Well, I think, you know, if you're trying to build a Logan case argument and you're asserting, and the Logan case turns on whether you're an authorized person, whether you're authorized to conduct foreign policy. And if that Supreme Court case, the U.S. v. Curtis Wright, if that Supreme Court case, the Supreme Court said and thus made the law of the land that the president has, you know, final authority over negotiating treaties and things, you know, clearly they have to be advised and consented by the Senate. But then the president, you know, essentially ratifies them that.
Right. The way I understood it, he has the final decision.
Right. And if that's the case, then, you know, we're building an even stronger case that these 47 senators broke the Logan Act.
Oh, I
because they're not authorized.
I agree with you. I think I got one more thing before I get off here.
Sure.
What is the benefits of hemp milk?
You know, there's it's high in omega fatty acids, you know, 3, 6, 9, whatever, you know, the stuff that's in fish oil, it's good for you. It's high in protein. It tastes good. There's also some speculation that it may have cannabidiol in it, CBD, which is one of the active ingredients of marijuana that does not get people high, but seems to be one of the principal ones that fights cancer and, you know, lengthens life, basically. So that's the thing with hemp milk. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Shano fact-checked this Mr. Logan situation, and it turns out that the guy who went to France, that wasn't Logan. The Logan Act is... Oh, it's Logan was the guy who was prosecuted under the act? They named it after the guy that they busted? Huh. He was not a member of Congress when he went over to France and tried to negotiate with them. That was later. He was elected to Congress after 1800. The law was passed in 1799, and he was prosecuted back then. So, whereas treason is giving aid and comfort to an enemy, and treason is punishable by death, the Logan Act is punishable by 3 years in jail. Now, my personal opinion is that the penalty for these people should be being voted out of office, and I'm guessing a number of them will be voted out of office. Whether this is going to be the straw that broke the camel's back for the electorate or not, who knows? But we'll see. Michael in Silver Spring, Maryland. Hey, Michael, what's up? Michael?
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air.
Hey, 2 points. You know, the military-industrial complex, you know, the government doesn't make anything. It contracts out to private companies. You know, from the eyes on the boots to the aircraft carriers and the F-35, these are made by private companies that have received contracts with the government
mm-hmm.
to make these items in the military industrial aspect of America, right?
Yes. Your point.
Okay. Now, it seems that we have filled up the warehouses again and have to use this stuff because you can't keep making tanks and armaments and boots and, man, I would just love to have the contract for the eyes or shoelaces for the United States government. But it seems like these, if you look at the map of the Middle East and you look at Iran, on the east side, I think it's Afghanistan. And on the west side, it's Iraq. And they're surrounded. And it seems like countries that have the nuclear weapon, it's a deterrent from keeping America from coming in. America won't go into nuclear companies, I mean countries that have the nuclear weapon. They're not coming in, but they came into Iraq, they came into Afghanistan, they fly around Yemen and all, you know, Somalia, just, you know, dropping armaments from whatever. And it seems Iraq is trying to keep America from coming up in their yard.
Iraq is flying out into three pieces, basically. Iraq is very quickly becoming the Kurdish Iraq, the Sunni Iraq, and the Shia Iraq. And, you know, that, which is, by the way, what Joe Biden suggested back in the day, you know, after George Bush first broke Iraq. So we'll see how it goes. Michael, thank you for the call. Kenneth in Parrington, Michigan. Hey, Kenneth, what's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I agree with you about the treason part. And if the president should decide to do something about it, what would he do? I mean, who would enforce this?
He could direct the attorney general to arrest these people for treason. He's not going to.
So would it be FBI, U.S. Marshals?
Yep, that's how you do it. It would create a constitutional crisis like we haven't seen since the Civil War. But that's how it would be done.
Well, I think it's time he flexes the muscle of the presidency and does something about this. This has just gone too far.
Yeah, I think so, too. Kenneth, thank you for the call. Tim in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Tim.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on. I was thinking back to my naive younger days. I used to think that nuclear war would likely be provoked by a lunatic dictator from a Middle Eastern country. Obviously, today we have such abundancy, or lunacy exists in the United States in abundance. You get that?
Yeah, I did. And I think you're right. And it's really a creepy thought to think, you know, all these years we thought that we were going to be blown up by, you know, the equivalent of a Khrushchev gone mad. And it turns out we might be blown up by Tom Cotton gone mad. I mean, it's just totally, totally strange. Tim, thanks for the call. Tony in Little Lake, California. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I want to talk about Ray McGovern on C-SPAN.
Mm-hmm.
He told about sometime before the Civil or after the Civil War that they put a law in place that they wouldn't hold protesters indefinitely.
Right.
And now, because anticipation of bombing Iran, like Lindsey Graham and John McCain both want to do that like yesterday, he says that they have reversed that law today. And that was my question, because I saw John McCain on TV one morning. He was singing the old Beach Boy tune, Barbara Ann, only he changed the word to Bomb Bomb Iran.
Right.
And he was laughing about it, and I think that's despicable.
Yeah, I'm with you. I am absolutely with you. Thank you for the call, Tony. Paul in Aurora, Colorado. Hey, Paul, you wanted to talk about the fraternity, Sigma Alpha Epsilon, I think it is.
Yes, I think it's very hypocritical. First of all, I'm a black male. I think it's very hypocritical for this particular situation to be getting as much information and as much press as it's getting. And when I am constantly, daily, bombarded with that same language in public places, which is totally disorderly conduct and totally harassment.
Mm-hmm.
When these kids want a bus, I'm not agreeing with it at all, in a private situation. And when my son, he attends Oklahoma University, and he's feels very insulted when black kids use this type of language.
Yeah.
And in public places. So to, I'm not saying it's appropriate, which it's not.
Yeah.
But to put as much press on these kids in a private situation, when people are harassed daily,
right,
public situations with this language, I don't understand it.
I get what you're saying. Paul, thank you. Thank you very much for the call and for your comments. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. This is this whole Tom Cotton Republican treason. The trending hashtag, by the way, is #47Traitors. And it's really trending. And have we tweeted 47? We should be making sure that we're tweeting that as well. It's just, this is amazing. This Tom Cotton, by the way, is the same guy who earlier said that anybody who violates Iran sanctions should be imprisoned to the third degree. Right. In other words, the person committing the crime should be prosecuted. Person selling things to Iran. For example, in 1999, we had an embargo on Iran, and Halliburton was illegally selling Iran parts that could be used for nuclear centrifuges and other things through the back door illegally. And the CEO of Halliburton who was doing this was Dick Cheney. So what Tom Cotton was proposing was that not only would Dick Cheney go to prison, but that his children would go to prison, second generation, and his grandchildren would go to prison. It sounds totally crazy, but this is, I mean, here, 47 traitors. This is, pretty amazing. And this is from this news report. What I'm reading to you right now is by Laura Clausen over at Daily Kos. And she's quoting a story that was over at the Huffington Post. Cotton also speaks to punish any family member of those people, to include a spouse and any relative to the third degree, including parents, children, aunts, uncles, nephews, nieces, grandparents, great-grandparents, grandkids, great-grandkids, Cotton said. The guy may be a combat veteran, but he has no understanding of the law. You don't put somebody's grandchildren in prison because of what grandpa did. As much as despicable as I find Dick Cheney. And I agree with Tom Cotton that Dick Cheney should be in prison. But I disagree with Tom Cotton that Dick Cheney's wife, Liz, isn't that his wife's name? Lynn, that's right. That Lynn Cheney should be in prison. I don't believe that that's the case. I don't think that Mary and Liz Cheney, his daughters, should be in prison. And didn't one of his daughters adopt a child recently? I don't know if he has any grandchildren or not. I'm not a Cheney follower. But if he does, I don't think his grandchildren should go to jail. I think just sending Dick Cheney to jail should be enough. But my point, this is what a whack job Tom Cotton is. This is how far off the reservation this guy is, or out in left field, or, pick your derogatory cliche. And Cotton is basically saying, just threaten them. Right. Yeah, that works really well. We've been doing that for, 40 years? He says there's nothing but hardliners in Tehran. No, that's not true. Actually, the Green Movement, 3 million people showed up. In 2009, Ahmadinejad was overthrown, essentially. Iran has a more moderate prime minister right now. So let's assume for a moment that under the Logan Act, these guys can't be prosecuted. The Logan Act says that it's illegal for private individuals to involve themselves in political or in, you know, negotiations with foreign governments. Let's assume that they can't be negotiated under the, they can't be prosecuted under the Logan Act because arguably they are authorized persons, right? Congress does have a advice and consent role in foreign policy. And let's argue that you really can't prosecute them for treason, even though we're of the opinion that that's what they're committing. Because, you know, treason is giving aid and comfort to the enemy and is punishable by death. And it's sort of like, you know, yelling genocide or something. I mean, you don't want to use these really draconian, really heavy penalties unless there's a serious, horrible crime. Now, what the Republicans have done here, in my opinion, is not something that somebody should be put to death for, which is what treason is. So what is it? We don't have, in my opinion, we don't have criminal laws that can hold these guys accountable. But what we do have is the ballot box. And that's where they need to be held accountable. And in the meantime, by the way, if you want to call your member of Congress and just, you know, especially Republicans, say, really? Were you one of the traitors? The number for the congressional switchboard is 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121. And that gets you to the main switchboard here in Washington, D.C. And then you can say, hi, I'm from Alabama. Who are my senators? Would you please connect me with one of them? Or I'm from, you know, Michigan. Who's my senator? Whatever. And they'll just put you right through. If you don't know your senator's name, just tell them what state you're from. Eddie in Copperas Cove, Texas. Eddie, it says here you disagree with me. What's up?
I rotundously disagreed with you.
Rotundously?
You finally just now finally added some verbiage that was missing. Number one, Senate, you know, the president has the power to engage in treaties with the advice and consent from Senate.
Right. Two-thirds of the Senate, to be specific. Yeah.
Say again?
I said two-thirds of the Senate, to be specific. Yes.
Two-thirds. That's the actual quote from Article 2, Section 2.
Right.
Okay, your caller that started the whole Logan Act thing misquoted it, and you agreed with him. He kept out the word consent out of his quote, conveniently.
Okay.
Secondly, treason is providing aid and comfort to the enemy and engaging in war with the United States of America. So in their action, what enemy are they providing aid and comfort to?
Well, that's a good question. And arguably, if these Republicans believe that Iran represents such a great threat to the United States that we shouldn't even talk to them, then the enemy that they're providing aid and comfort to is Iran.
No, they're not. They're not providing any aid and comfort. Aid and comfort, that means you help that enemy.
Right.
Comfort. You know, aid and comfort, actually, you know what action clearly defines aid and comfort? Jack Murtha.
If
when
these guys
said,
yeah, I'm not going to relitigate Jack Murtha's career. He's gone and dead. If these guys blow up if these 47 Republicans blow up these negotiations between Iran and these six countries, one of which is us, if they blow up those negotiations and Iran says, okay, screw it, we're going to go build a bomb, then Iran has gotten what some of the hardliners in Iran wanted, and they got it by virtue of the actions of these 47 Republicans. So how is that not aid and comfort to an enemy?
Because number one, two of those countries are definitely not friendly countries to us, Russia and China.
We collaborate with both constantly. We've got a $900 billion trade deficit with China. We buy all their stuff. We send them all our
jobs. And they're trying to overtake us.
And Russia has been working with us on Iran. Russia worked with us on Syria. You know, they got all those chemical weapons out there destroyed. I mean, yeah, there's clearly some conflict around Ukraine right now, but these countries are not just theoretically. We have treaties with these countries. These countries are allies, not enemies of ours. Eddie, thank you for the call. The more I think about it, you're kind of convincing me. Okay, it is treason. You know, call the Attorney General. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Or is it something else? Is there some other way to describe what Tom Cotton and his Little Mary Band are doing? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The President of the United States shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, provided two-thirds of the senators present concur. And he shall nominate, and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States. Which, by the way, brings us to Loretta Lynch. It's, 115 days or something like that now? It's over 100 days that the Republicans in the Senate have been just ignoring the fact that the Attorney General has quit his job. There's a replacement. Oh, we can diss her too, right? That, in my mind, appears to be essentially what these Republicans are saying. Is that because she's an African-American? Is that it? Or is it that they just disrespect law enforcement officers? She will be the top cop in the United States. What is it? Why are the Republicans doing this? Why 3 months with no response when previous AGs were, you know, advised and consented were passed on very quickly, relatively. You know, it's been a long, long time since anybody was this long. I'm not even sure anybody's ever been this long for AG. So, you know, we'll see where this goes. Annie, in Boise, Idaho, watching Free Speech TV on your cable system. Hey, Annie, what's up?
Hey, yes, thank you, as always, for the great show. Excuse the naivete of this question, but I'm just wondering if there's any way that Democratic leadership could engage with people who are running against Netanyahu. I mean, something like 1,000 people rallied in Palestine not too long ago against him.
I understand what you're saying, and it's sort of like, you know, turnabout is fair play, you know, we're going to get you back, that kind of thing. The problem is that Netanyahu and the Republicans are taking a lot of flack right now for trying to basically, you know, use the U.S. Congress as a political tool for Netanyahu in his elections, which are coming up next week, I believe. And if the Democrats got involved in that, it would get very, very messy. It wouldn't be a good thing. But
always have to be the adults in the room.
There you go. Yeah, that's basically what's going on. Annie, thank you for the call. It was an excellent idea. Mike in Albrightsville, Pennsylvania. Hey, Mike, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for letting me on. Good to finally talk to you. I'm a new listener here. And
well, thank you.
I just want to go back on your subject of the traitors. You know, I'm kind of the same age as you. Right now, in my time of my life, I never expected to be on a monthly fixed income. I've worked all my life. I've been through bankruptcy. I've been through everything with this economy.
Right.
So a lot of people are hurting right now. In our days when we were younger, we took to the streets when stuff like this happened. It's time for people to take to the streets and make their voice heard and do something about this. This just can't continue and just continue and continue. It's a shame that the youth today is just more occupied with everything because that's how the media plans it. And I'm sure the elite
well,
plans that way to keep everybody occupied.
Yeah, there's a bunch of structural stuff that has happened in the last 35 years to make youth basically be paralyzed. I mean, they're $1 trillion in debt. They're scared to death that there's not going to be a job for them. I get what you're saying, Mike, and I'm with you. Thanks for the call. We'll be right back. I find it fascinating, this whole this dialogue that has emerged in the United States about how far these Republicans have gone. We know that Nixon in 1968, we know this for a fact, that Nixon blew up Lyndon Johnson's successful negotiation to end the Vietnam War. And thus the Vietnam War dragged on for another however many years it was. And thus many more millions of people died as a result of it. Richard Nixon committed treason for political gain to become president. There's a fair amount of evidence, a very large amount of evidence, including the testimony of the president of Iran, that the Reagan campaign did the same thing, that the Reagan campaign entered into an agreement with Iran to hold our hostages throughout the election period of 1980 so that Ronald Reagan could be Jimmy Carter. So we have two Republican presidents who have committed treason to get to their office. You've got, is it treason or not what Jeb Bush did in Florida in 2000? It's a good question. I mean, he had Catherine Harris knock 70, 80, 90,000 African-Americans off the voting rolls, which got his brother within 500 votes of Al Gore, which was close enough that they could hand it off to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court could say, okay, don't look at that man behind the curtain. This is all, we're all done here. So George W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, and Richard Nixon, three Republican presidents, all of them taking office by shady policies, shall we say, if nothing else. And now the Republicans are doing everything they can to not only destroy President Obama and deny him any kind of legacy. They want to make sure this guy goes down in history as worst president ever. Right? Don't ever make that mistake again. Not only are they doing that, but they're also trying to beat up on Hillary Clinton. I mean, this is a twofer, right? Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. She was involved in some of the initial negotiations here. She was the foreign policy face of this administration for quite some time, for several years. That's amazing. That's amazing. All of this, in my opinion, they're doing all of this so that they can win the White House in 2016. Which is no good reason to betray your country. David in San Francisco. Hey, David, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Tom. You know, as a matter of fact, when you talk about it in that way, just thinking about the October surprise of the end of Jimmy Carter, beginning of Ronald Reagan, that was specifically a secret negotiation with Iran. And it's my feeling that one of the reasons why we've been at loggerheads with Iran, the Republicans specifically have been, because they never want us to have diplomatic relations, because there are people in Iran that know about the October surprise, and they know about the treason that got Ronald Reagan so-called elected.
Oh, that makes such perfect sense, David. That makes sense.
It's just criminal, and so they're keeping this up in order to destroy evidence.
Right.
But I was actually going to raise a second thing. You may be aware there's Governor McDonald was recently convicted in Virginia. And so now there's this new letter. I think it's 43 attorneys general have come up with a letter saying it's okay for these politicians to get involved in lobbyist affairs. And so not only do we have, 42 senators that are committing treason, but now there are 43 attorneys general that are saying that that bribery in the form of dinners and light fare is a good thing. So this is actually an adjunct to Citizens United that the corporate state has every right to commit treason because business is more important than the affairs of state.
Yeah, that's an excellent and important point as well. David, thank you for the call. We have the clip of Steve King calling for the Logan Act prosecution. You all set? Here, let's play this. This is Republican Congressman Steve King, right-wing crazy train from Iowa. And this is how Republicans talk about the Logan Act when they're thinking about prosecuting a Democrat.
This is an enemy of national security that holds the gavel and the Speaker of the House, and now she's accusing the CIA, the people that have kept us safe over all these years, to be a group of liars who willfully and calculatingly lied to the United States Congress. It is outrageous, and the American people need to speak to their Democrat members of Congress and ask them to come up with a new Speaker.
Oh, that's interesting. He was calling for a new Speaker, but he wasn't calling for prosecution under the Logan Act in that clip. Oh, he did that in writing, I see. Okay. All righty. 10 seconds. Oh, 10 seconds. All right. So here we are with 47 Republican senators harming this country in a way that could conceivably lead to a war, to something like World War II. I started out with quotes from the illustrious Dunderheads, Rex Stout's 1944 book, chronicling the speeches, mostly by Republicans, a couple of Democrats, Dixiecrats, basically, but mostly by Republicans on the floor of the House and the Senate, saying, you know, that Hitler guy, he doesn't represent a threat to us. Why are we talking about this?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And why were Republicans saying that in the 1940s? Well, or in the late 1930s? Because FDR was a Democrat.
And now for something completely crazy.
You so crazy.
You crazy.
This is crazy. This is crazy. This is crazy.
Oh, now you're just being crazy.
Yes, our crazy alert for the day over in Germany. They're having a problem in the party district of St. Pauli in Hamburg, Germany, with people peeing on the walls. Apparently a lot of bars, not a lot of public restrooms. And so I didn't even know that there was such a thing as super hydrophobic paint. Hydro is water, phobic, fearful. Hydrophobic means that they've got this paint that when water hits it, it causes the water to bounce right back off it. So, according to this article by Ben Hopper, or Hooper, the walls are covered in super hydrophobic paint that causes sprayed liquids to bounce back in the opposite direction, causing public urinators to make a mess of their own pants and shoes. The sign on the wall says, don't pee here, we'll pee back. Watch out, it's pee back time, group member Julia Stern said in the video. Very interesting. Okay. I think, though, you know, the crazy alert, the genuine crazy alert's what's going on in the Senate right now. It's amazing. Let's remember, Lamar Alexander, Dan Coats, Thad Cochran, Susan Collins, Bob Corker, Jeff Flake, and Lisa Murkowski, Republicans who did not sign this insane letter. Meanwhile, one of the Koch brothers-funded professors, if I am reading this right, Zed Jelani, writing over on Alternet, now they're saying it in public, professor at Koch-funded university department calls for less democracy. The Charles Koch Foundation has given $23 million to George Mason University for their Mercatus Center. And Dr. Jarrett Jones, professor of economics and BB&T, professor for the study of capitalism at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, says less democracy and more epistocracy. Epistocracy is ruled by the smart. Less democracy and more epistocracy could lead to better governance. Democracy leaves power to the majority, while epistocracy allocates power to the knowledgeable. Jones did not imply that democracy should be eliminated, but should be lessened by 10% for the sake of long-term economic growth. Yeah, you know, it's working for China. You just have dictators make up the rules. Jones's remarks are fairly consistent, Zed Jelani notes, with Koch political activity, which includes advocating voter ID laws that are designed to drive down voter participation. Yeah, hey, if you hate democracy, make it harder to work. Dennis in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Dennis, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Good. What's up?
I think the word we are looking for today is sedition.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pretty good definition from Wikipedia. In law, sedition is overt conduct such as speech and organization that is deemed by the legal authority to tend toward insurrection against the established order.
Right. However, we don't have
we don't have federal sedition laws any longer, do we? I believe that, you know, there was one passed during the John Adams administration that expired on March 4th, 1800, as I recall. And then there was one passed by Woodrow Wilson during World War One, and that expired in 1918?
You know, that's a little before my time.
Okay.
But
Shane is looking it up. 18 USC 23. It's 2384. So it is a law right now, Shane. Aha. Okay, Dennis, you've nailed it. Sedition is against the law, and you're right. That is the word I was looking for. Brilliant. Thank you. Margie in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. Hey, Margie, what's up?
Two things. First of all, I'd like respectfully disagree with you on one point. I've heard you repeatedly say that something won't be done because it will create a constitutional crisis. We're already in a constitutional crisis.
I agree. I wasn't saying it wouldn't get done. I was just saying that it would be a constitutional crisis.
Right.
And, you know,
we're already in a constitutional crisis. So.
Yeah, and I would say we have been since Reconstruction, frankly.
Right. The second thing I wanted to bring to people's attention is there is a petition on the government website. File charges against the 47 senators in violation of the Logan Act.
Oh, really?
Now, that might be the wrong act.
Right.
And it might be the wrong verbiage, but right now this thing has been up for, I don't even think, 24 hours,
yeah.
And there's already 15,000 signatures.
Cool. Yeah, we just tweeted that out. Margie, thanks for that, and we'll keep spreading the good word. And the hashtag is 47 traitors, right? Yeah, there you go. Margie, thank you. Lars in Longview, Washington. Hey, Lars, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Honor to talk to you. I've been listening to you since you came on KPOJ for the first time.
Well, thank you.
I sure miss having you in Portland.
Well, thank you. We're on the air in Portland on X-Ray FM now.
I don't get it.
Ah,
it doesn't
okay.
reach this far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's up, Lars?
Well, I think the Republicans are winning. Here in the last election, they had a lot of people stay home because they were frustrated and didn't like what was happening. And I've been politically active my whole life. I'm 70 years old. I registered to vote first thing when I was 21 before I even got a liquor card. I carried that card every day. I still got it. And if Obama and the administration, and I should say President Obama, but if they don't do something about these senators and what they've done and what they have been doing, I think my vote doesn't mean anything. I mean, our president and the administration didn't go after the banksters.
Yeah.
We're going to have another big problem with that, as you say, in the crash of 2016. But to allow 47 senators to do what they have done and walk away, it's going to make people like me say, why the heck should I vote? Why should I be politically active? Why don't I just... walk away and start doing something different.
Well, the main reason, Lars, is that the best response to these 47 senators is the vote. It's to vote them out of office. It's extremely unlikely. As I've been making this case that these guys did not violate the Logan Act, and I don't think they did. And I don't think that our sedition laws cover this, and I don't think that this is treason. I think it is morally treason. I think it's fundamentally un-American. But I think a legal case would be very, very hard to build against them. And so what we have to build is a political case. And that means that ultimately we have to respond to their behavior at the ballot box. So, Lars, it's even more important that you be registered to vote in the next election.
Well, yes, but now with Citizens United, and it doesn't look like we're going to get that overturned. It looks like it's going to get stronger.
Well, we'll see.
And people
we'll see.
Are believing the Koch brothers and the right-wing media, especially faux news.
Yep.
I
agree. It's, we live in dark days. I mean, but it's like, you know, Jefferson said, just before the election of 1800, he said, you know, soon the reign of witches will pass. He was referring to the Adams administration, which he was the vice president of. But he was like, soon the reign of witches shall pass. You know, this country always returns to balance. And I think we will again. I'm actually quite optimistic, although I do see some considerable challenges on the way. But Lars, thank you for the call. It's nice to hear from you.
I'm honored to talk to you. Thank you for taking it.
Thank you. Yeah, good talking with you. Milton in Albany, New York. Hey, Milton. What's up?
Hi. How you doing, Tom? I'm a first-time caller. I've just recently got the Sirius Radio to listen to you. I am so pleased. I'm so happy to just talk to you. And thank you so much for being on the air and being a voice of reason.
Thank you.
I have a friend on Facebook who I call a friend. I call my best foe forever, who is a right-wing a Republican, and I refuse to not have him be a friend because I like to have these, not arguments, but listen to the debates. And I wanted to find out, when people say things that the Constitution has been dismantled by President Obama, how do you respond on that question and things like that? And lastly, will you ever be, and you and Joe Madison, be on shows like Fox and those different shows so I can see you debate,
Yeah. I used to, Milton, back 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, I used to go on Fox a fair amount. I was almost a regular on their morning show. And I wrote this book, Crash of 2016, and there's a chapter in that book about how Roger Ailes had pitched GOP TV to Richard Nixon when he worked in the Nixon White House. And Nixon didn't go for it. But, when he met Murdoch, he pitched it again. And basically, that's what you've got. Fox News was originally proposed as GOP TV. And ever since I wrote that book, Fox has not invited me back at all. So, surprise, surprise. But it was getting old anyway. I don't think that, when Fox looks for Democrats or liberals, they look for people who are not necessarily the sharpest knife in the drawer. And I don't think that they were really happy the way that I would. I beat up Bill O'Reilly one time on the air, and he ended up running what's called VO, voiceover, full screen video. Just as I was making my best arguments, it was really frustrating.
Okay. So. Well, I hope that you get a chance to do that, because it's voices like yours, as well as, like I said, the Channel 126, that are making sense great arguments. And I thank you so much, man. I'll get off the line.
Well, thank you, Milton. Thank you very much for the call and for your kind words. And I, the one thing I would say in response to your, how do you respond to your friend who says the president is an emperor tearing apart America, would be to say how or where, as I did with that caller earlier. He had no specific answer. All he had was the Fox News bumper stickers. Milton, thanks for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls, my thoughts, and the news of the day right after this. And welcome back, 15 minutes before the hour. John in Crawford, Tennessee, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
I wanted to bring up a point that President Roosevelt said in Warm Springs, Georgia, back in 1930, in the 30s. And he said that the four horsemen of the GOP are destruction, delay, deceit, and despair.
Wow.
And I don't think anybody else could much say it better than that.
Destruction, deceit, delay, and despair.
And despair.
Wow.
And that's from a speech that he made in Warm Springs, Georgia in the 30s.
Yeah. Huh.
So I think you're doing a great job, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, John. And
have a great day, sir.
Thank you. Great to hear from you. Thank you. Destruction, delay, deceit, and despair. That's remarkable. We need to. I would love to track down the audio for that one. This is, there was a time in this country when calling out Republicans, A, was, done and done with, respect, I suppose, Harry Truman, FDR. But it, also that it was reported on the media. Now, when somebody calls out Republicans, by and large, it doesn't get reported on in the media. The media is very Republican friendly. I mean, after all, the media in the United States is virtually all very large corporations that are run by very right wing folks. So the vast majority of the media in the United States. So surprise, surprise. Anyway, I want to get back to this. Now they're saying it in public. Zed Jelani writing for Alternet. A lesser known aspect of Koch influence is their spending on ideological warfare. He points out they don't just throw their money into election campaigns and think tanks, but they also finance these think tanks, these advocacy campaigns, educational curricula. $23 million the Charles Koch Foundation has given to the George Mason University, for example. And thus, Dr. Garrett Jones, professor of economics at George Mason University, says we got too much democracy. According to Jones, Zed Jelani writes, less democracy would lead to better governance because politicians would be inclined to work on long-term growth rather than spending to impress constituents during election season. See, somehow this meme has really invaded the Republican Party, that politicians give people things in order to get those people to vote for them, and that that's bad. Now, it's not bad from the Republican point of view if what the politicians are giving is tax breaks for billionaires and rich people and big corporations. That's not bad, giving people things in order to get them to vote for you. But if they're poor people and you're giving them food stamps or you're giving them long-term unemployment benefits, that is bad. So gifts to corporations and rich people, good. Gifts to poor people, middle-class people, working-class people, bad. This is, you know, the Republican worldview here. And I actually want my politicians doing what will please the majority of Americans rather than a small minority. The majority of Americans want Social Security strengthened, not privatized. The majority of Americans want Medicare strengthened, not privatized, not voucherized. Anyway, we'll be right back. Before the hour, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, right here on the Tom Hartman program. Let's check in with Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by Goats for the Old, goat.com and free-don.org. And Congressman, welcome.
Thank you, Tom. How are you?
I am well. And I should also note that you are the author of the book on how Washington, D.C. works, Sideswiped. Bob, what's going on in the world today? And has the Justice Department yet issued indictments against 47 Republican senators for violating the Logan Act or the sedition laws?
Well, that could happen if you read the law and you look at what they've done under the Logan Act. Tom, this is, and I've been around politics a long time and, as you know, served 11 years in the House. And no matter what, I have never seen something so outrageous on so many fronts. Just going for a second, though, to what they're saying. Even before talking about the Logan Act and violating the law as members of the Senate, but the fact that they are saying to the Iranians that no matter what the deal is, with a stroke of a pen, which is not true, this can be eliminated. So let's say hypothetically that this deal is 98.999% a good deal for America, for the world. Not just us, but the other five countries that are involved in this. Let's say for Israel, it's a good deal. Well, the Senate is telling them, you know, that can be wiped out, so why take the deal? So this is nothing but a pre-war drum beat. And the reason I say that is the author, Senator Cotton, who, by the way, is a brand-new senator from Arkansas, so they went to him and said, boy, this is really going to make you a big deal. Where is he at as we speak? Well, within 24 hours, he is speaking to the, and this is, by the way, off the record and non-attribution type of seminar, and he's going to be talking to the National Defense Industrial Association. And who are they? They are Boeing. They are Oshkosh Defense, Booz Allen Hamilton, Mantech International, L3 Communications, and Northrop Grumman.
So
they are the, of course, weapons manufacturing. Who is their best friend? The author of this measure, which has went to Iran, and of course is an attempt to leave no option but a war.
So the merchants of death, this guy's going to hang out with the merchants of death, today you said?
Oh, yes, within 24 hours. You know, they're not subtle about it. Now, this is going to be all off the record. None of this will be attributable to him, what he says in that in that private meeting. But he is going to be hanging around with some of the biggest manufacturers. Now, we also have to look at this brand-new senator from Arkansas, Senator Cotton. We have to look at the fact that he's also supported supplying bunker buster bombs. So he's had this whole brief new history in the Senate of being the war guy. He likes weapons, and now he's authored, because, you know, one would say, well, why doesn't Bob Corker, by the way, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee, who's a Republican from Tennessee, who is not even a signatory to this letter that's been sent, why didn't he do something? Why isn't he on it? So obviously Senator Cotton has some motives. It's called money, raising contributions. I and many who serve in Congress know all about that. So this is
just
one of the worst.
You think Tom Cotton's just doing this to jack up his campaign contributions from defense contractors?
Oh, absolutely. I think you're going to see a pattern here, a pattern where you know, others could, if they pursued them, could be put into prison. You'll see a pattern here of collections of money. You'll see fundraising letters of who can be the better friend of Israel, for example, not looking at supporting Israel on the substance, but looking at, you know, who has stood up for Israel. I mean, this is what the Republicans are doing. They're trying to build their base for the contribution purposes. And I promise you, you will see defense money into this senator's coffers. These senators have gotten together, these 47 Republican senators, and are just absolutely doing something that even Republican friends of mine who are consultants have privately emailed me in the last 24 hours saying, you've got to be kidding. First of all, what is what the president says is correct. President Obama has made a point. The best friends of the Iran hardliners, the mullahs that don't want us to talk because they want to do what they want to do, these are their 47 best friends now,
because
they have the same goal. Do not get a deal, even if it's good for the world.
Right. It's bizarre. It's just
this is beyond anything
I have been saying that I don't know of any time in the history of the United States when an opposition political party invited a foreign leader to come speak before the Congress and trash the president, and then went out of their way to intervene in you know, by contacting the leader of a foreign government. I mean, can you imagine if the Republicans who were opposed to our entry into World War II had sent a letter to Hitler saying, just hang on, you know, we'll, you know, eventually Roosevelt is going to die or, you know, get kicked out of office. We'll take care of you.
Well, can you imagine when we were debating the Iraq War, and it was very controversial, as we all know. Can you imagine at that point in time, those on both sides of the aisle that didn't want the ability of President Bush to use full force if needed, can you imagine if they invited the president of France to stand at the podium in the Congress to give their side of it?
Right. France, who refused to go along with us, thus
right.
You invented the phrase freedom fries.
I know. But can you imagine if they would have, I couldn't have invited him, but can you imagine if somebody else would have invited him to come over? I mean, that's a great example of what the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, did. And this is almost planned now. First you have Netanyahu over here, now you have this letter, and then within 24 hours you have the senator who authors the letter going to one of the meetings of the biggest amount of the war machine producers on planet Earth. So I don't think this is by accident. I think it's by design.
Wow. Wow. And but Cotton's not up for re-election for 6 years, but he's a young guy, so he's building a war chest he can use to help other legislators and things? Do you figure? Oh, we lost Bob.
Go up the ranks.
I'm sorry, say it again, Bob.
He can go up the ranks, you know, in the Senate, obviously. He can do a lot of things.
Right. So the more money he can raise, the more he can do that.
Yeah, because why Cotton? You know, people have to ask themselves the question, why a brand new guy? Why?
Yeah, very, very interesting. Bob Ney, with the Talk Radio News Service, author of Sideswipe. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
Good talking with you. Former Congressman, Republican Congressman Bob Ney. And boy, does he know this town. You got to read his book, Sideswipe. Brilliant. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. This is turning into a national scandal. I mean, it's truly astonishing what is being said, what is being done about Tom Cotton, this traitor and his treason. I mean, you know, and his 46 buddies who went along with him on it. I don't know if you've had any luck getting through to your Republican senators. The number is 202-225-3121, 202-225-3121. If I had a Republican senator, and I don't, I live in Washington, D.C., I have no senators. But if I had a Republican senator, I would call and say, did you sign that treasonous letter? Are you one of the traitors? Maybe also, can you explain to me why you shouldn't be arrested or something like that? Maybe that's a little too confrontational, but I would be curious to hear what you learn. Senator Dick Durbin said this. He says, I don't believe the Republican leadership was thinking clearly. Although many cannot accept it, here in this chamber, President Obama is the president of the United States, and he deserves our respect. Yeah. Debbie Stabenow says that this letter that these 47 Republicans sent to Iran is shocking, dangerous, and deeply troubling. And she went on to say, when war hangs in the balance, this is Senator Stabenow, when war hangs in the balance, and specifically nuclear war hangs in the balance, should members of the United States Senate be in the position of publicly undermining the United States president? It is shocking, dangerous, and deeply troubling to me that 47 members of this body decided to stand on the side of the Ayatollahs and the most extreme voices in Iran. Now, what is it that Republicans like Tom Cotton love that Ayatollahs also love? Well, how about a big military? If the earlier caller is to be believed, Tom Cotton's off to go raise money from the defense industry. Maybe not, but I mean, of course. It's amazing. Meanwhile, over at the House of Representatives, Trey Gowdy, the guy who has, the Republican who has taken over, South Carolina Republican who has taken over the investigation into Benghazi. The Republicans have created a permanent investigative committee, which so far has discovered one thing, which is that Hillary Clinton was using personal emails. She's going to be speaking on this any second now, by the way. And now they're doing fundraising on this, on Benghazi. The Republicans, Trey Gowdy, this Martin Tisiak writes, from issuing a completely unnecessary subpoena to Secretary Clinton to Republican fundraising off the tragedy in Benghazi, it appears that the Select Committee has given up any pretense of a legitimate investigation and now has just become a surrogate for the Republican National Committee, said Elijah Cummings, Democrat from Maryland. This taxpayer-funded committee should focus on an investigation that ensures reforms are implemented to improve the safety and security of our officials serving overseas, Elijah Cummings added. But Representative Gowdy is going to be speaking at a March 19th event titled Beyond Benghazi. Right. Remarkable stuff. It is just remarkable. Where do we go with this? It's almost unimaginable how bad things have gotten. Richard in Evanston, Illinois. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind?
Great segue. I called in with the same question is, what are we going to do from here on?
Right.
And a fellow who was about 2 years older than me, 70, said, you know, he thinks his vote doesn't count. And I remember when we used to have get out the vote, and people talked about more people voting, which we no longer do. Both parties, I think, are guilty of it, to tell you the truth, because when you run a campaign, you want to energize your people and not the other person. If everybody voted, if 70% of the people voted instead of 30, it would change everything.
Yep.
So I call it the spite vote. As bad as these people are, and if anybody doesn't think that what happened with the Iran thing isn't a crystallization of where we've been going with these Republicans since really Clinton, but it's gotten really bad under Obama, then they haven't been paying attention. But I, as despairing as I am of – despairing as I am, I guess that's the right word – of all this, there's only one answer, because we can't outspend them. The Kochs are going to double the amount of money that the Republicans took in last year for the presidential race. It was a billion bucks, I think, both
right.
sides. Now it's 2-1. It's going to be $2 billion to the Republicans. Democrats aren't going to get another $1 billion, I don't think. The only thing people have to do is as mad as you get about this stuff, these people are not going to compromise. There's only one way to beat them. You can't argue with them. You had that contortionist Neil on who's turning himself into a ball trying to justify what these Republicans have done with Iran, this Iran letter. The only way is if everybody gets out and votes, and that'll get even with everybody. I mean, the Democrats aren't going to like it anymore, because everybody's going to have to craft a different message, because they have to attract voters. Now they know who's going to vote. They can carefully craft their nonsense on both sides.
Right.
Republicans.
Here's the game, though, Richard. And you know, Paul Weyrich famously said this back in 1980, that the fewer people who vote. Well, actually, here's Paul Weyrich himself. Here's what he said.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote.
This guy was running the
I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
There you go. And so, and the other thing that they know, Richard, is that negative advertising does not cause people to vote for your candidate. It causes people to say, screw it, I'm not going to go vote. They're all crooks. And so that's why 70, 80, 90% of the budget that you typically see when Republicans are running for office is negative advertising. It's tear down advertising, because it's another way of suppressing the vote.
Yeah. Well, we can't get bogged down even, you know, the other caller, the Republican who's written the book Sideswipe, talked about me. He's talked about money. You always have to think about money.
Yeah.
It is the fuel of everything. And you can't even get caught up, I think, with what these clowns have done with this letter to Iran. You have to think about just voting them out of office. There's no reasoning with them. They are beyond reason at this point. We're really almost, to me, it seems almost like pre-Civil War, where you can't get people to agree that slavery is bad. And what does it come to but a war? These people will not take one step towards the center. They're getting more and more emboldened and going more and more right wing.
Well, it's because they're being pushed harder and harder. They're being pushed harder and harder by these crazed right wing billionaires. They're calling a tune. Richard, thank you for the call. David in Seattle. Hey, David.
Hey, Tom. Great show. Bob Mabe stole most of my thunder, but that's okay, because I'm glad he mentioned what he did as far as what Tom Cotton was.
You know, he was the only member of the House of Representatives who spoke Farsi. He may well still be.
That's amazing.
Bob knows Iran really well.
Hey, Tom, maybe if you can run with this, but when Cotton was running for senator, he was, with the help of Fox, of course, lying about ISIS and Mexican drug cartels joining forces and crossing the border and attacking Arkansas.
Really?
Yeah. This is when he was running for senator. But then just in December, he was calling for or issued specific calls for military intervention in Iran.
What, right. Yeah, of course. This is a guy. This is a junior John McCain. David, thank you for the call. We are learning slowly and painfully who Tom Cotton is. And it's grim stuff. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And Hillary Clinton's going to be addressing her email controversy in a minute. To the extent that it's a controversy, 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Melvin in Jonesboro, Arkansas, watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV satellite. Hey, Melvin, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? I appreciate you taking my call. But as a person from Arkansas and watching Tom Cotton up close, I'm truly embarrassed by what he has done with our president and these other senators.
He is your senator.
I mean, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
And that just goes to show you what the Koch brothers meddling in everybody's politics will get you. I mean, he slaughtered Mike Pryor by, like a million votes.
Mm.
It's like that's what Arkansas wanted was this right-wing racist person to represent them in the Senate, I guess, is my only guess. But it's embarrassing. It truly is. I just want to let you know my perspective from Arkansas side. I cannot believe what I'm seeing.
Okay. Well,
they need to be thrown out of Congress, out of the Senate.
Yeah. And the appropriate venue for that is the ballot box. Melvin, you live in Arkansas. Tom Cotton is your senator. Are you hearing from your fellow Arkansans? Is that how you say it?
Well, I mean, that's the thing about Arkansas. A lot of people here are racist.
Mm-hmm.
They hate Obama. I mean, that's what's going on here in the state of Arkansas.
Wow.
It is truly a red state. But, I mean, it ain't representative of all of us here. But, a big part of the state, that's the way they think. They watch Fox News and they beat their chest all day long. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I'm wondering, what is it going to take to wake people up out of that stupor?
I don't know. They will not listen. If you get into an argument with one, they start bringing up Benghazi. They start bringing up everything that don't make sense, and that's their arguing point.
Right. Well, it really proves the point, Melvin, that there are really only two kinds of people in the Republican Party. There are millionaires or billionaires, very rich people, and there are suckers. And, basically, your friends are the suckers. They're the ones who say, yeah, let's vote in a way that will help the millionaires and the billionaires. Let's vote to cut their taxes. Let's vote to cut regulation on their companies. Let's vote to let them have, more of the ill-found gains that they can skim off the top of their companies. But let's make it harder for their workers. And somehow, they think that this is like, a desirable, a good, a healthy thing. It's downright bizarre. So have you been to any Democratic Party meetings, Melvin?
No, I haven't. I haven't been to any meetings here in Arkansas.
It'd be fascinating, don't you think?
Weakened.
Don't you think it'd be fascinating to go to a meeting and find out, what's being done in your community?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, really. I mean, I would love to. I try to get as politically active as possible, but
yeah.
I have to work all the time.
Yeah, no, I understand. I same here. Although I guess
I'm sure. I'm glad you let me talk to you, though. I'm really a big fan of your show. It's really cool. I really like it.
Okay, Melvin, thank you very much for the call. It's great to hear from you, and thank you for watching us in Arkansas. Very, very kind. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. Matt Anderson is going to be with us. He's the director of Fall and Winter, a survival guide for the 21st century. Stick around. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. And by the way, special presentation of Fall and Winter, this documentary, a survival guide for the 21st century. will be part one tonight at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Free Speech TV, and part two will be tomorrow night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And for additional showtimes, you can click on freespeech.org for all the information. And speaking of that documentary, that movie Fall and Winter, Matt Anderson is with us, the filmmaker of Fall and Winter, a survival guide for the 21st century. Fallwintermovie.com is the website. Matt, welcome.
Thank you. How's it going, Tom?
Good. So tell us about this this movie, and as a documentary without a narrator, how does that work?
I was asked quite a few times why I wasn't in the film, but I sort of felt like putting myself in the audience's shoes, and I had access to some really great and amazing people. So I sort of wanted to be the conduit through which I would ask questions of these people that I think many people would have, and sort of get out of the way so I wasn't, you know, intervening too much.
Right.
But so, clearly the film is sort of my take on what they said, and sort of tried to organize it in such a way that reflected my process.
So what were the questions and what were the answers?
Well, at first I was, you know, what the hell is going on right. in our world, and when, how did that come about? And so I didn't expect that these questions would lead me to the beginnings of agriculture, to even explain our, you know, how global poverty exists or anything like that. So it really led me to, on this quest around the country, trying to interview more and more people about the origins of this crisis, and then what this crisis itself is, and how multidimensional it is, and how holistic the problems and then the solutions themselves are. So, you know, the questions range, and that it led me to everyone from, you know, Michael Parenti to Stanislav Grof to Grace Lee Boggs, all these really great and notable people who spent their lives dedicated to trying to understand where humanity goes from here and how we got here.
So how did we get here?
Well, I think we've sort of never really recovered from some of the issues that began in the early stages of agriculture. It sort of created the necessity for mass labor, and we perpetually undermined the ecology in our area, so we had to continue to take over new land. And we haven't really ever created a sustainable situation where we didn't have to move on and take over new land and denude the land that we were on. And this sort of created the need for the military and the need for, you know, having to subjugate other people and having masses of uneducated people having to do massive work of labor of agriculture. And that's a systemic problem that we're still suffering from.
Right.
And so it sort of, so I think going back to those roots helps us to understand our current predicament and why it's now at the point where we have no more land to take up. We have no more arable land left on the planet to do agriculture on, and we're denuding it. Millions and millions of tons of topsoil are being lost every single year. It's just going down the rivers, and it's being eroded, which is also another massive contributor to climate change that we don't talk about often enough.
Right. Dan Quinn suggested that a lot of our problems began with the agricultural revolution in as much as it provided an opportunity to lock up the food. The idea that that the more extreme, the farther away from the equator people got, the more extreme this form of kingdom and hierarchy became, because the seasons were long enough and hard enough that if somebody locked up the food in, you know, on the equator, it wasn't a huge consequence because you could always walk around and find food. Because things grew all year round. But if somebody locked up the food in northern Germany, and so you had nothing to eat through the winter, you would die. And that was one of the starting points for poverty and patriarchy and hierarchy. What do you think?
I would agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. I guess, you know, Daniel Quinn had that great sort of way to phrase that with the levers and the takers as well.
Yeah.
It's instructive to look back at this history to understand where we are now. We definitely have to understand, I think in understanding that, we can now better see where we are and why today. But the strategies moving forward have to incorporate that. But, I think this film is really an attempt to look at those origins as a way to understand what we do now, you know.
So what do we do now?
Facing.
We're talking with Matt Anderson, the director of Fall and Winter, a survival guide for the 21st century, that will be playing at 8:30 tonight and tomorrow night on Free Speech TV, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. So what do we do, Matt?
Well, I think we do a variety of strategies, but I think they all have to involve moving back towards a better relationship with the planet. I think that's central to everything, whether that's political or how we live or build or eat. It all has to be back towards that direction because we've truly undermined and abused everything that we need to live, you know, everything we need to live well. So I think in terms of how we build, how we rebuild community and how we eat particularly is where I've been recently focused on is really trying to get as sustainable as possible with as low impact as possible on the land that we use. And so I think we've gotten away, we've automated, we've industrialized the way in which we've outsourced in terms of all of our energy needs, all of our food needs, all of our even community needs, to our phones and to, processed food and things like that. So we need to retrieve that. And that's an individual effort that if done collectively, really will help humanity move in a better new direction.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that is unique about humanity is that we are the only species on Earth who is capable of producing waste that is not the food of something else. We produce waste that kills everything else as opposed to being the food of everything else. And this is a relatively recent thing in the last couple of centuries. Would that be a good point to start? How do we make sure that everything we do is recyclable?
Absolutely. But I also think that the most immediate need is the soil. I mean,
yeah.
The UN has made this the year of soil, and I think we legitimately have to face this. If we don't face this, we're not going to make it as a species.
Yeah, right. And if we were to regenerate our topsoil, it would sequester a hell of a lot of carbon, too. Matt Anderson, the movie is Fall and Winter, a survival guide for the 21st century, 8:30 tonight and tomorrow night at Free Speech TV. Hang on, Matt.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Matt Anderson, thank you for being with us, Matt.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for making a great movie. We'll be back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. The National Defense Industrial Association, NDIA. Their website is ndia.org. And if you go over there and you click on meetings and events, you will discover that the National Defense Industries Association, or Industrial Association, which counts among its members L3 Communications, Northrop Grumman, Mantech International, Oshkosh Defense, Booz Allen Hamilton, where Snowden used to work, Boeing. I'm holding the invitation here in my hand. Join us for an exciting LID breakfast on Tuesday, March 10th. That was this morning. Featuring Senator Tom Cotton. All remarks are off the record and strictly non-attribution. So Tom Cotton tries to take down the President of the United States, meddle with U.S. foreign policy, risk World War III, a nuclear World War III, I might add, and then goes to the defense contractors, who I think probably are very generously supporting his campaign and his candidacy and his presence. He's got another 5.5 years to go there in the United States Senate. It's amazing. Rodney in Chicago Heights, Illinois. Hey, Rodney, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? Authorization for use of military force, there's a section that allows the government to detain American citizens without charge for an indefinite period. I think it's time to use that on the 47 traitors and Speaker Boehner and Kevin McCarthy, who emboldened these boneheads by inviting Netanyahu, round them up and in the ones that were part of the caucus room conspiracy, round them up, send them to their favorite prison down there in Cuba and give them the treatment that they don't consider torture.
Right. Well, it's an oddly appealing thought, but I don't think it's practical, but I understand where you're coming from. Rodney, thanks for the call. That's a good one. Flo in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Flo.
Hi, Tom. Nice to hear your voice again.
Thank you.
I was watching on C-SPAN 3 the trade policy. Froman, he's working with Obama. He wants to pass it.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles Schumer was excellent. In other words, he said, none of these trade deals have proved that they're helping the middle class, so I love that. What I don't like is Ron Wyden. He's for this deal. And you know what? They have part of these trade deals, they have a job assistance where they retrain people.
Mm-hmm.
Part of all these trade deals, job assistance program.
Right.
So that tells you right there. And last year, Charlie Rangel asked Froman, who's working with Obama to push this through, Charlie Rangel said, what jobs are going to be targeted and how many? And he did not answer that question.
Right. Yeah, this is a this whole Trans-Pacific Partnership or the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, SHAFTA, this is a train wreck on steroids, and it's going to be a bipartisan train wreck. And frankly, I doubt that it's going to pass, because I think that enough of us on the left are awake and saying, hey, wait a minute. And I think that there's enough Tea Partiers on the right who are saying, you know, we don't want to give up any more sovereignty. But we'll see where it goes. Flo, thanks for the heads up on that. Good to hear from you. Britton in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Britton, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I just wanted to call and say that Senator Pat Toomey is one of my senators, and he was one of the senators that voted for or signed that letter.
Uh-huh.
Basically undermining the president. So I called his office, and I couldn't get a hold of anybody in their D.C. office. They said their phone shut that off the hook, so that's a good thing. But so I called the Philadelphia office, and I had asked, why does the Senator Toomey feel that it's why should he have to undermine the president in foreign policy and foreign policy negotiations? And their argument was they're not undermining the president. It's basically a statement stating that we do not want Iran to have nuclear weapons. I'm like, well, the president is trying to prevent that from happening, and by having the senator and 46 other senators send a letter, you're undermining that negotiation and, in fact, endangering our allies in overseas and Americans.
Right.
And I also argued to the fact that, you know, I'm still in the military. I served in Afghanistan in 2009, 2010. I'm like, this is the same argument you guys need to go to Iraq. And I'm not about to have, you know, more people die overseas just because you want to go to war and you don't believe in diplomacy. So it's just very frustrating that we have these members in Congress that are just warmongers.
Yeah.
And
chicken
hawks. And I told them on the phone, and it, you know, I'm like, good luck winning re-election, because it's not going to happen. So I'm just frustrated that these people, you know, have them send their sons over, because,
yeah,
you know, it's just a mess, and we don't need another war, especially with Iran.
I'm with you. Britton, thank you. Thank you for the call. Thanks for making the call to Pat Toomey's office and for sharing with us the results. It's great to hear from you. Bob in Sherman Oaks, California. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Tom. Unique for me, being the left-wing radical I think I am, I'm going to defend Benedict Arnold.
Okay. Well, he was a pretty good ally to General Washington in the beginning there.
He paid for 1,300 men to go up to Quebec. He was I'm not sure what all that was about, why we were in Canada. All I know is he won that. He was overlooked. He died from being shot in the same, almost died from being shot in the same leg twice. He was passed over, and what he did when he joined up with the British and offered them West Point for £20,000 was not that different than a lot of people who were, what did they call them, Tom? Was it loyalists?
Yes.
Tories?
Yeah, the Tories, so the loyalists.
He was actually taking one of the two sides that many Americans, that many colonialists were taking. He,
correct.
You know, but yes, selling West Point for $20,000, we no doubt makes him treasonous. However, I have a big issue, two really big things I'd like to add to what's going on. I think what's happened to this country, above all, is that it's become, from the Supreme Court, a monarchy.
Yeah.
Well, you have people.
I agree. We are now a constitutional monarchy, and in fact, our monarchs, the Supreme Court, have more power than the monarchs of any of the fully developed constitutional monarchs. You know, the King of Norway cannot veto legislation.
Right. The fact that you have to hope that they're not going to overturn health care.
Yeah.
They provided this ability for the richest in the country to control what goes on. The fact that they actually picked a president by five people.
Yeah.
Huh?
In 2000, yeah. Yeah, here's something about Benedict Arnold. I didn't realize that Benedict Arnold tried to sell West Point to the Brits for $20,000. What I'm wondering is Tom Cotton gave a off-the-record, non-attribution speech this morning to a group of defense contractors. I'm wondering if for selling out his country yesterday with this Iran letter, I'm wondering if Tom Cotton got more than $20,000 this morning.
Well, he won't until he gets out of office, and I hate to say it, take two of the favorite Democrats and starts collecting hundreds of thousands per speech, as both the wife of and the president now get up to $100 million for speaking, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So the kickback now seems to come after you're out of office. It's not while you're in office that you get caught at.
Yeah.
You know,
well, not if you have a super PAC. This is the thing. The Supreme Court has made it possible for any politician now to create a PAC and to launder enormous amounts of money. You know, John Boehner does this. $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year comes in, or $1 million a year, comes into his account, and then he passes it out to various members of the House, and that's why they all vote for him for Speaker every year, is because he controls this enormous pot of money. And
by the way, the figure on defense is that we sell 1/3 of all the munitions of
on the earth
exported.
Yep.
$65 billion.
Yeah.
Is the figure from, I think, the most recent figure. That sounds low to me, but
yeah.
$65 billion, and we sell 1/3 of the munitions to the world. So
amazing.
are those defense contractors? I would think that one of the best things a good progressive president, Elizabeth Warren or someone like that, could do is that those that will not pay taxes on all the money that they keep overseas and will not have no right to American contracts.
Right. I'm with you. I'm totally with you. And we need to start enforcing the Buy America Act again. In 1935, Franklin Roosevelt passed this thing. It said that if the federal government buys anything, they have to source it from an American source, and it has to be made from American goods. And the only exceptions are those exceptions that can be authorized by the executive, by the president's office, certifying that basically that product is not available in the United States. They don't even have to actually give a reason. They just have to provide an excuse. And during the Reagan administration started passing out these waivers like there was no tomorrow. And so all these companies that were making things for the U.S. military, for the U.S. government, you know, whether it was computers or desks or uniforms or whatever it might be, they all started manufacturing overseas. And that's, you know, 1/5 of our economy is government purchasing. And it's just nuts. And we've been issuing these waivers. Every presidency since Reagan has been issuing these waivers. It's time to just stop. Bob, thank you for the call. And go back to the original intent of the Buy America Act and say, you know, we're going to buy America. Now, Nancy Pelosi actually passed a law to that effect, but the Republicans in the Senate filibustered.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Because, of course, it would have helped the average working person, but it wouldn't have helped the millionaires and billionaires. And, you know, the working person is the bottom of the Republicans' party. Welcome back, 15 minutes before the hour. And Brian in Matthews, North Carolina. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, Professor, how are you this afternoon?
Fine. Thank you for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
I want to ask you, what the Republicans or conservatives are doing right now as far as the Treasonous Act. I too agree that it is a rather treasonous act. I would say it's unprecedented in the manner in which they're doing. So, I would stick with that.
Yep.
But you think that the reason that they're doing that, and I'm of the mind that they're doing this because they know they can't, knowing that President Obama will not react in the way in a way to make him look bad in front of the country. He's like, see, there it is. That's what we expected right there. Mm. So they push it to the line as far as they can just to get away with it. So each time they get away with something more, they turn it up a little more. And I'm going to know, I mean, is that your, I mean, would you think that that's possible, that they're pushing it because they know they can't?
Yeah. I don't know. I Brian, I honestly don't know. I don't know what's in their hearts. I don't know what's in their minds. I know that these people, probably a substantial number of them are probably sociopaths. You almost have to be to live with the cultural dissonance or the intellectual dissonance of taking positions that you know are going to hurt people, and yet, you know, you're well paid to do that. Go ahead.
They're not crazy. I mean, they're crazy. I'm sorry. They're not dumb.
Right.
To use their gifts or evil purposes or what have you. I also agree with Bob. Maybe this is by design, because it's always one after another. So whenever we get something else off the table, out of the news cycle for a moment, something else is already waiting.
Right.
That's planning.
Right.
It's definitely planning.
Yeah, I think what's going on here is we're simply seeing the logical extension of the caucus from conspiracy. These guys met, and Kevin McCarthy was there in the meeting. Paul Ryan was in the meeting. Jim DeMint was in the meeting, now runs the Heritage Foundation. These guys met for 4 hours at the Caucus Room restaurant the night that Barack Obama was being, the night of the day that he was inaugurated, January 20th, 2009. And while he and his wife were out dancing, these guys committed to each other to destroy his presidency. He will have no legacy. He will be viewed by history as a failed presidency. He will only serve one term, just like Jimmy Carter. We are going to block this guy from having any kind of success. And any success he does have, like Obamacare, we're going to tear it down, and we're going to convince the American people that it not only was not a success, but it was a terrible thing. And they have been very successful in this sabotage and propaganda campaign, Brian. They've been very successful in it.
Right, and that was part of my idea. And to me, I'm not saying they've succeeded, but they've gained more ground in that they shore up their base. They've indoctrinated more extremists, more crazies out there.
Yeah.
And on a full perception, they've made him look totally weak or insignificant.
Well, I'm not sure it makes President Obama look weak. I think it makes him look like a statesman, that he's responding to this in a way that is not... he replied with kind of dry wit rather than a tantrum. I would have had a hard time not throwing a tantrum. It's like, are you kidding me? These guys are doing what? But, Brian, thank you for the call. The president is not temperamentally, he's not going to go all Harry Truman on him. But, you know, maybe this is not the time to go all Harry Truman on him. Maybe this is the time to let them dig as deep a hole as they want. We'll see. 10 minutes before the hour. Here. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And John in Silver Spring, Maryland. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking the call, and good afternoon.
Hey.
Two quick questions. Hi. Could you name the senators who signed off on the letter? I also called Pat Toomey's office in D.C. and was put on the answering machine.
Yeah.
So your other caller just informed that he did sign it, so thank you to him. But I would, if you could call these guys out, that would be great. The second thing is I learn a lot from listening to your show, and I heard some conservatives talking today about how they're angry and sent off this letter because Obama is trying to basically get a treaty with Iran, and that treaties have to be signed off by Congress. Can you explain, how is this different as far as what he's doing to get this nuclear deal done?
A treaty is an agreement between one country and another country, and that's not what Obama is participating in negotiating. John Cameron, the Prime Minister of England, is involved in these conversations. François Hollande, the President of France, is involved in these discussions. Angela Merkel, the Prime Minister of Germany, is involved in these negotiations. Vladimir Putin, or at least his foreign minister, Mr. Lavrov, of Russia, is involved in these negotiations. And China is involved in these negotiations. And we are equal partners with these other five countries. These other five countries. It's the five permanent members of the Security Council plus Germany. And that's who's negotiating with Iran. It's not the United States negotiating with Iran. And Republicans are wildly overstating what's going on here in terms of the president's power and the president's ability to make things happen. This is not a bilateral treaty. What will come out of this, hopefully, is an agreement, a framework for an agreement that can be ratified by the UN Security Council. And then becomes international law. And that was the rebuttal of the Iranians, the Iranian foreign minister. He said, you know, you guys are lecturing us about how the Constitution works, but you don't understand how international law works. The foreign minister of Iran, by the way, is an American educated professor of international law. And he well understands how the U.S. Constitution works. So, Tom Cotton just has made a total fool of himself. John, thank you for the call. Nick in Chicago. Hey, Nick, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks. I just wanted to bring a lighter note to mm-hmm. If the previous caller was saying about the hate messages or the fear messages Tom Cotton put out to get elected, and Arkansas, perhaps we need to reevaluate geography lessons in Arkansas, because last time I checked, if they were to jump the border, they'd have to get through Texas.
Right. Yeah, Tom Cotton. I don't know
if we should blame Tom Cotton or the education system in Arkansas.
Right. Well, you know, to put it in context, Nick, apparently what he said was that ISIS and Mexicans were getting together to sneak ISIS guys across the border, and eventually they would work their way to Arkansas. I don't think he was saying they're going to cross the border into Arkansas, because that's not possible. But your point is well taken. It's well taken. And when you see a senator like this, you sometimes have to wonder about the state that they came from. Nick, thanks for the call. Doug in Hamul, California. Hey, Doug, how you doing?
Oh, it could be better. I could be you.
Okay.
Anyways, I'll make a comment about Hillary Clinton's emails that you mentioned earlier.
Right.
And one of the things that hasn't been brought up yet on any of the media or yourself or MSNBC, your favorite station, is that the number of enlisted men and officers between 2008 and 2014 that were prosecuted, fined, removed from military service, or even doing jail time for using a private email address to conduct government business.
And that number is?
It hasn't been discussed.
Oh.
It's in the thousands. I was in the Navy for 20 years, and during my tenure, I knew personally people that were prosecuted for just using a personal email account.
Doug, while you were in the Navy, you could be prosecuted for failure to salute. Do you think that the Secretary of State should be held to that same standard?
That's not the same thing.
There's completely different. You know, when you join the military, Doug, you surrender your rights under the Constitution of the United States. Being a member of the military puts you under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, not the Constitution, or as sub to the Constitution. And the rules are completely different. Doug, I reject out of hand your argument. John in Owings Mills, Maryland. Hey, John.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
All right. Well, listen, I finally get to get this point in. You know, these American Taliban, a.k.a. the Republicans, because that's what I call them, their behavior is nothing new. You know, and the apple doesn't fall far from the tree with all these guys. Back in the, you know, post-World War II, I just got finished with the Nazis next door. And I guess you probably know this, that the CIA under Dulles and George Bush Sr. were all complicit. They were all complicit in bringing in Nazis, you know, to fight the communist threat.
Right.
So that people like, you know, the great commie B actor commie Hunter Reagan et al. All, you know, they all were involved in this stuff. And of course, look what the party has morphed into. So all this behavior is nothing new. They're no friends of Israel. You think these guys are really concerned about the lives of Jews? They're not.
They believe that for the Messiah to return, that Israel, Jerusalem, has to be the capital of Israel. The Second Temple needs to be rebuilt on where the mosque is right now, and that all the Jews have to die. And everybody in Israel knows that that's what these fundamentalist Christians, these Mike Huckabee Christians, believe. And, you know, they just kind of, okay, you know, these guys are whack jobs, but, you know, we'll take their money and, you know, give them a nice tourist trip. So it's pretty amazing, right? Having spent a fair amount of time in Israel and having interacted with some of these fundy Christians. It's really bizarre. Anyhow, thank you for being with us these 3 hours. We will pick up the show tomorrow, same time, same place. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.